Well, the evolution of Fox is just absolutely bizarre, but that's a whole
They
other
called the
conversation.
Fox fucking the son in the first place, you know. That's one of those things that I can't help but not, you know. I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
What was
F
that?
is the sixth letter of the alphabet. O is the 15th. 5 + 1 is 6. X is the 24th letter of the alphabet. 4 + 2 is 6. Though that is sequential for one thing. So, and it's the only times in the a 26 letter alphabet that 6 comes up, just by two numbers. So you have 666 is Fox,
Right, and even if you
which.
do Pythagorean numerology, then FOX are all the sixes, and it's actually the only word you can spell with 666.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, and then you have obviously like Firefox, where it's the fucking fox around the earth. You know, it's like, that's not like, I don't know. I don't think it's a mistake that they're called Fox, that you have 20th Century Fox. And then, you know, the Doors song, 20th Century Fox, you know, she's got the world wrapped up inside a plastic box. You know, it's just like, oh God, he
We're
knows it.
inside her Rubik's Cube, yeah.
Right, and then he goes, light another cigarette, learn, forget, you know, because, you know, this the cigarette thing with Gimmel, you know, that is the killing stick, you know,
Yeah.
it's like completely, you know, light years over people's heads who are kind of like just like hypnotized by TV, you know.
So,
It's
do
a
you guys
monster.
remember when Fox came out, when it debuted as a network? Do you remember, like, I just remember them, like, who do these idiots think they were? You know what I mean? It's kind of like when the USFL popped on the scene, you know, or the XFL. We can have another football league. Americans love football. Why can't we have a league? You just knew it was doomed to fail. But yet, here it is. And they've got the Super Bowl. And they've got a whole media network on cable. They are legitimate. And I can't help but think that it's analogous to Scientology trying to become the fourth religion, or at least, you know, as complete and as legitimate as the big three. You know what I mean?
I don't think the big three are that legitimate or complete. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's like I don't like NBC. You know, NBC, the maker of most military industrial products, I don't really see them as much better or much different from Fox. But I understand your point of like that they would seemingly come onto the scene and it's like, oh, well, that's just like this new station. They're not as big as NBC. But like I said, ultimately, I see it as the same thing.
And at the heart of the matter with Scientology and with Fox, that I think, in my opinion, a savvy thinker recognizes is that people who think Scientology is evil and it's terrible and it's awful, that it's bad for people or some negative view of it. If anything, Scientology exposes how corporate religions work because it's so transparent. You know, because it evolved within the last 100 years, everyone knows that the science fiction behind it is mythology. Everyone knows that it's all built around a corporate structure. Everyone knows the whole goal was to get tax-free status and all those kind of perks.
Right.
Fox, as a network, the whole goal of that was to get a news station, to get a chunk of the media that spills out into the world. And what is news and media? It's a way to change history. It's a way to travel in time and to make people who are born in 20 years from now to think that the way Fox presents news is legitimate. Fox basically just exposed what the three main networks in America did for 50 years. That as much as you want to hate Scientology and Fox, I'm almost convinced that in its genesis, the person who started it knew that if you were ever going to take a hammer and chip away and make a crack or a dent into the powers that be, that this was the only way to do it. You'd have to beat them at their own game. And I kind of think that in the tower-like structure of Scientology and Fox, you know, all the stuff we projected onto the towers of 9/11 as having charges already built in between the floors to make them implode, that the systems of Scientology and Fox are built to spill as well.
Oh, yeah.
That they are designed to go as high as they can and then topple down and to take everything else with them, to change the landscape with them. And maybe those are the two towers that really we need to look at, that is the event in the coming sort of that is the big moment, and that the shockwaves of those two towers and how those two things fall, that's what we've projected onto the 9/11 event. Maybe the cognitive dissonance and the shockwaves of it and what it will reveal is so massive that that is sort of the backwards motion canvas of this event. Yeah, you know. I mean, fuck, L. Ron Hubbard, dude.
So I'm looking here at, I was just curious because my friend was mentioning that Tom Cruise named his daughter Suri, and she was relating it to Siri, which is in the iPhones now or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like that you can ask it questions and it just will answer everything, except usually it just says, do you want me to do a web search for blah, blah, blah? But anyways, I'm looking up the name meaning out of curiosity, and it says the meaning of the name Suri is red rose. The origin of the name Suri is Persian. Notes usually translated as sorry. Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes are reported to prefer the meaning princess from the Hebrew name Sara, but this derivation is unlikely. Another unlikelihood is that they actually named the daughter thinking it was princess, and that was just their fucking cover story or whatever, because isn't it an interesting point too that opposite co-star to Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, names her daughter Rose? Just this reoccurring thing with, I mean, how many fucking witch movies was she in? I don't know if you guys saw, I did that a while back. I played with Photoshop and took all the Nicole Kidman witch shit all together. It just goes on and on. And then there's the weird one with that girl who's in Eyes Wide Shut, who basically he goes into the costume place.
Lili Sobieski?
Is that her name? You're totally... Okay. So is that... That's her name, huh? Okay. She showed up in the remake of The Wicker Man, which is, you know, they put the fucking man in the Burning Man, you know, they set the man on fire and the sacrifice or whatever. But the girl, I'd have to look it up again, but she's like the beekeeper or whatever. What's that?
Really? I've never seen the remake.
Yeah.
It's the one with Nick Cage, right? Nicolas Cage is in the remake, correct?
Page, totally, but yeah. It's just funny because, and he's looking for this I believe it's a rose, but then there's this whole thing when he goes into the school and on the chalkboard is this fucking quote from William Blake her name is Rose Woodward, is a little girl that he's looking for, but then the fact that it's that girl and she's all holding the fucking axe and she's like the bee lady in the town, and then it's the girl from fucking Eyes Wide Shut. Like, I don't know. I was kind of tripping out on all the levels of this with it. But then with this Rose business, it's just been coming up over and over and over again with this whole American Beauty thing, and then American Beauty is the Grateful Dead album, obviously. But then that at the end of American Beauty, it says it dedicates the film in a way. It says, you know, special thanks to Dr. Bill and Alice. And who the hell is Dr. Bill and Alice? But an obvious reference to Eyes Wide Shut. But then the fact that these are like, this is a Rosicrucian film, like they're playing around with Rosicrucian symbolism like crazy, you know? And so I don't know. There's really interesting levels to it. And the whole Alice thing, that it's like Alice and Bill is the lizard in Alice in Wonderland who carries the ladder. And then it's just, I don't know. I was kind of
Now, is Nicolas Cage the one who dies?
Yeah, Nicolas Cage is the sacrifice.
Okay, so think about it. The idea of the Wicker Man is not just the man made of wicker, but sometimes also that they would put them in wicker cages.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Totally. Right. It is what happens. They also put bees all over him. They have him stung by all these bees, and then I thought it was interesting that the girl is the bee lady who is in Eyes Wide Shut.
Right, so okay, yeah, so I know that from Golden Bough, but think about it. His name is Nicolas Cage. He's put inside a cage, but the cage, it's made of wicker so that it burns. The bees, to me, bees are perfect death and rebirth symbolism. You know, they are, not only do they sting people and some people, die from them, but they also pollinate everything. So you have this, like, that bees actually keep the cycle going, yet they're thought of as dangerous. You have the fact that they make honey, which is, honey's connected to psychedelics through Terrence McKenna's Food of the Gods.
Okay, so her name is Sister Honey, is the girl from Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah, Sister Honey. And so also that the bees all work for the queen. And you have this reoccurrence of the queen symbolism occurring here. So that, and then also in this film, you also have Ellen Bernstein is Sister Summer Sissel. But Ellen Bernstein, is the mother in Exorcist. And she's also the mom in Requiem for a Dream, which is our second contribution of Darren Aronofsky. And so, I don't know, this is like a thing loaded with sync here. And so you have Molly Parker as Sister Rose, and also Sister Thorn. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's crazy.
And Cage is just in his classic tongue-in-cheek, over-the-top weird mode. The kind he brings to Bad Lieutenant 2, Port Authority. He's clearly just... He's in full comic book mode, and it's actually pretty funny if you see it through that lens. I know a lot of people shit on him for some of his movie choices and some of his acting, but the guy is obviously very talented. All you have to do is go and see Adaptation or Leaving Las Vegas. I mean, the guy's got the chops, but he kind of always knows exactly where he is, and I definitely give him credit for that.
Yeah, I would want to send Adaptation to see. I would like to see what Jason thinks of looking at Adaptation in relationship to his Black Dahlia trip out. So Scarlett Johansson and Black Dahlia, Jason was really kind of busy with that. And I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen Adaptation, and I know they all get high off of dahlias. And I believe it's Meryl Streep. I don't know, kind of funny.
Do they call it dahlias?
Isn't it? Oh, no,
it's
no,
a white
I'm sorry.
Orchid.
Oh, it's
the white,
orchids.
It's white orchid.
I take the whole thing back. I stand reflected. Whatever.
Well, white orchid, Black Dahlia, right?
Yeah. Right. White orchid, Black Dahlia, I guess. It's just flowers. We were watching War of the Roses.
That's a depressing fucking movie.
Oh, well, totally. I mean, my parents, when I was young, my parents would watch it, and they would always fight afterwards, because my dad would just, and it was my dad would get all, like, he just, the whole time he was watching it, he would look at the woman like it was my mom, and then once it was over, he would just get all, like, snappy, and, like, you would fucking do that, wouldn't you, and get super intense. But I was watching the outtakes of War of the Roses after we watched it, and there's all of this stuff, like, he has an orchid collection, and she fucking goes in with a fire extinguisher and sprays down all of his orchids to kill them. And there's, like, he's there in the first scene all, like, preparing all these orchids, like, all, like, delicately, and he's, like, all into his orchids. I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny. But in terms of that, and it also
happens. They die in that movie, don't they?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
In War of the Roses, don't they die at the end?
Yeah, they die at the end, and then when it zooms out in the final last scene, which I forget if he's at near the Capitol or if it's in D.C. I don't think it's in D.C. I forget where it is, but Danny DeVito is telling this guy this whole thing. Anyways, it zooms out of his window, and you can see a bunch of white roses there at his window, and it's just interesting, like, this idea of we're painting the roses red. You have these white roses, and you paint them red, and how Princess Diana is the rose. She's England's rose. Right, Elton John sang the song, you know, Goodbye England's Rose and this and that. And I don't know. It's just, that's.
Have you guys seen the Lady Gaga, Lady Di clip? The new song she has?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, you know what? There's two new things out there that I've seen a lot of people shit on that I wanted to shit on, but after watching it a second time and just sort of getting over my own biases, Lady Gaga's Lady Di, I think it's only a live clip from her show right now, and there's a video by a singer named Lana Del Rey that's called National Anthem.
I did see that. The song is terrible, but the video is pretty awesome.
I can go either way on the song, but yeah, I wanted to dislike the video, but I think it's so brilliant in its obviousness, you know? It's just so literally perfect. And it's something that you just, even though there's really nothing R-rated in it, it's something you just couldn't get away with 20 years ago, I don't think.
Mm. You know,
I really think there would be an outcry about it.
You know, she's got the real ruby slippers, Lady Gaga.
Really?
Yeah, she talks about it. She does a performance of, what was it? She sings a song for Judy Garland, and she tells the story of how she ended up with the ruby slippers.
She just seems to be very aware that she's property.
Wasn't it? That's she talks about, or that she saw, at least she held the ruby slippers or something. I forget. I'd have to watch it again. But in one of her live performances, she goes off about this whole thing with the ruby slippers. I think she said she fucking has them, even though I would think that they'd be at the Smithsonian or something.
But, all right, so wait, I have to interrupt you guys, because you're talking about something that I've spent the last few weeks writing about. Here's the deal. So you have, you're mentioning JFK painting the roses red, and now ruby slippers. So there's the idea that, it was actually James Shelby Downard who pointed out that Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, as in ruby slippers. So it's the idea, like, you know, you want to get out of Oz, you use the ruby slippers. You want to take out Ozworld, you use Jack Ruby. You know, it's the same sort of idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does you guys follow that?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, cool. Now, let me see if I can pull this up. Now, there's also something I realized, that you could take it a step further, and his name, Lee Harvey Oswald, his name is Lee O, L-E-E, last initial O, or Leo. He's the lion of Oz.
Uh-huh.
Right? Now, I've just been kind of going back and forth playing with this, like, Oz and Wonderland. I found this. When Lee Harvey Oswald, you got to give me a second, the file's loading, I have it here. Lee Harvey Oswald gets arrested. He has a fake ID in his pocket. It's a draft registration card under the name Alex Hiddell. And on the papers he used to actually order the rifle and the pistol and all this stuff, he, on his post office box, he just used the initials, A period H-I-D-D-E-L. Okay, A period H-I-D-D-E-L, as I'm pretty sure. I'm going to pull it up right now, but... do you know who Alice in Wonderland, the Alice in Wonderland stories... Yeah, so Oswald is H, is A period... H-I-D-E-L-L. So I thought you could take that, and obviously, so his name, A period H-I-D-E-L-L, could be rearranged as Hide All, right? You just take that A and move it into the middle. But you also have the girl that Alice Wonderland is based on is Alice Liddell. So what you have, there's four letters from L to H. I don't know if it's hard to explain without the visual, but if you think, just think in your mind, four removed. So you take the D out of Liddell, because D is four, right? So take out the D, that's four removed. And then you take four out of L, move back four spaces, is H. So you go from Alice Liddell to Alec Hiddell just by removing the four. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And now, I don't know whether that's intentional or not. I mean, obviously, I think probably the joke, if there's an encoded joke here, it's hide all. Seems like the more obvious cipher. And yet, I can't help but notice this strange similarity in the names, that he's both like the man from Oz and from Wonderland. Like, he's a total fantasy character. And aside from the obvious fiction of the JFK assassination, that you have these strange, again, it's like, was it a joke? Like, did someone, you know, use these as sort of ciphers to encode all this, or is it just a weird cosmic joke, or where do you find that middle ground? I don't know, but I just thought that was really interesting. So I think it's fascinating that you guys just went from JFK to Ruby Slippers and all that.
Yeah, I can't help but think of Lee from Naked Lunch, and how, you know, Burroughs would refer to himself as the exterminator. And there's this weird thing where he killed his wife in real life, you know, doing the William Tell routine, and shot her in the head while they're all high. And nothing ever came of it for him other than deep regret, supposedly. But I thought it was interesting that I had Lee on my mind recently, because we watched this recently, and I was thinking of how there's like this kind of like Manchurian Candidate mind control thing in it, where he's basically saying that being a writer is his cover story, or being a homosexual is his cover, and that, you know, all these things are to distract the attention from his missions. Is what's presented by the voice of Burroughs as the cockroach in the thing. And there's the whole, like, come, come, Mr. Lee, you don't have to play dumb with me, like, Burroughs. But anyways, yeah, so you have Joan Lee is also Joan Frost, and then he's William Lee, which would be Billy. But anyways, I don't know, I was just, I was thinking of Lee recently, so it's funny that you'd say that it's Lee O, you know, Lee Harvey. I never stopped and like thought about his name other than the Oz idea.
Oh my god, yeah, Harvey. What's Harvey? Harvey's the imaginary rabbit, the white rabbit that takes you to Wonderland.
Yeah, totally. Jason pointed that out. I never noticed that either. That blew my mind.
Well, have you ever seen LeClaire's? There's an image that LeClaire posted up at his Wrong Way Wizard blog spot of Harvey or Oswald the Rabbit.
Yes, I have seen that. Uh-huh. Oswald
the Rabbit. It's genius. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a black rabbit, right?
I remember him thinking he's green, but
well, I mean, it was
black. But it encodes everything that you're talking about right there.
Yeah, it's an old cartoon, right? That maybe they turn into a comic book too, or I don't know which came first, but yeah,
like a cartoon short or something.
And it's Oswald, yeah, totally. But the whole follow the white rabbit, and then it's fucking Lee Harvey Oswald. That's something. Oswald poster.
Yeah, he is. He's like a Mickey Mouse type, black with a white face, rabbit. Oswald the Lucky Rabbit in Africa Before Dark. So here's, yeah.
And there's the lion with the rifle right above the
Leo.
Right eye.
Right, yeah. Leo and Oswald the Rabbit.
Wow, there you go. And then you have strength pictures, the lion. The strength, exactly. Card, right? Which is Hebrew for the Hebrew word for strength is Oz, which is where the term Oz came from for the Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
Even though I just have to repeat that every time because that's kind of crucial.
Oh, no, it is. It is important. Now, all right. Since I'm giving everything away today, I'm giving my valuable ownership of ideas here. Here's something. So JFK gets shot by Oswald, right? So we know, okay, so we've already got Oz, divine strength, lion, all this, so it's all there.
With a magic bullet, don't forget.
Right. So does that make JFK a werewolf? I don't know, but sorry. So he's Oswald. Now, we can also take that 77, Crowley's Liber Oz is Liber 77, correct?
Right, because the gematrical value of Oz is 77, which is also the gematric value of the Greek for Pan.
Right. Now, check this out. I have not seen anybody point this shit out. JFK gets shot, okay? And you know what he turns onto? It's referred to as like the Stemmons Freeway. So he gets shot and they race him to the hospital by driving on the Stemmons Freeway or something. But you know what Stemmons Freeway is? U.S. Highway Route 77. So he literally, it's almost perfect. He's in between the 70s. Like, if you want to take Oswald in the book depository, he's, like, literally in between Oz and 77 when he gets shot. It's, like, that same, like, short distance. So, like, basically he gets shot and they, like, turn onto the highway and rush him to the hospital. They turn right onto 77.
And isn't Liber Oz by Crowley his attempt to explain the tenets of thelema in the most simplest of language, so even the common man can understand what it's all about.
Yeah, that it's every like word the is most one syllable. I think every it's word the most, is one
yeah,
syllable.
It's the simplest explanation of what the law of the new aeon is, right? So, was that the simplest explanation of the old aeon in that act, or was that because you said he was about to turn onto Route 77. Is that a fragment of the past or is that a heralding of the future?
Well, all right, so I did some research. It actually turns out he was always going to go on to 77. If you look at, I actually found in the Warren Commission where they say the whole reason, like, it's this like weird thing where Dealey Plaza is this triangle. And this whole time he's driving along Main Street, and then they turn, they like make a right turn onto Houston, and then make a left onto Elm Street, where he gets shot. So they actually turn closer to the book depository and Grassy Knoll, and you know turn onto Elm Street, where he gets shot. And it's this very small stretch of Elm Street. And in the Warren Commission report, they say the whole reason they made that turn is because JFK had this appointment he was going to, and like they like timed it out, like so he lands in Dallas and then he has like 45 minutes to you know for a parade and then he has to go to this appointment. So they timed his route so that he would go to this lunch appointment, which was off Route 77. So the thing is, you because that whole triple underpass, you can't really turn on to 77 from Main Street. So they had to like basically move one block over to the right. It's sort of like, you know, getting in your right lane so you can turn off. So they went that one extra block over to the right to get onto Route 77. So it was always their intent. And actually, the traffic, there's not really much else you could do from Elm Street but get onto 77. So it was always the intention, which is interesting to me, is that, like, just as a sort of clarifier, it's not like, oh, he gets shot and then suddenly history changes and he ends up on 77. He was always going to be on 77.
So, you know about Kern Gate?
About what?
Kern Gate.
Oh, is that...
Have you ever heard about this?
I think,
the crazy fucking gate thing that supposedly JFK had to go through on his way?
Yeah, I actually saw that through Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, totally. So okay, hold on a second. I'm going to send it your way. This is like maybe it's over halfway down the page, but if you go down until it says Kern Gate and there's a little black and white photo of this gate, I thought maybe there was a bigger photo. This thing is fucking crazy.
Yeah, like, I've seen the same. This is the same website. I've seen this.
Oh, there
this,
it
yeah.
is. Yeah, they have a bigger version of it too. Yeah, so it says Kern Place, and it's just like this unreal, like, okay, so maybe I'll. And I don't need to read the whole thing, but the fourth edition. Okay, so Kern Gate, also known as the Gate of a Thousand Doors. Its creator, Peter Kern, which reminds me of CERN, but that's probably the point. A turn of the 20th century Mason created it both as an entrance to the village of his namesake, Kern Place, which is easily read across the gate, as well as the creation of a symbolic and metaphorical gateway into death. The gate also marks the entrance to a strip of land known as the Giornata del Muerto, or Journey of the Dead Man, near El Paso in the extreme west of Texas. It is also alleged that its creator was also ritualistically beheaded beneath it. So we have off with his head, which is, you know, that's the whole thing in Alice in Wonderland, is that the king is the bitch. You know, and he just does what he's told, and the queen is the, you know, kind of conniving off with his head. We're painting the roses red, fucking whatever. Okay.
Okay.
So this image is which represents JFK and his assassination in the public eye, which led to him being hailed as the second Christ through his death in the spotlight. It is believed that JFK ritualistically passed under the gate and through the Giornata del Muerto as part of a Freemasonic rite. It is the theme in which ties into King Kill 33. Manson made first reference to Kern Gate in a post to the BBC on August 19, 1999, where it is stated, "This is the end, my only friends." Subject: "This is the end, my only friends." Article: "Thank you all, far and away, for helping us live through such a tumultuous tour. I am writing to you from the Kern's Gate and from Death Valley, the birthplace of our new album. Details to follow." So this album that he's talking about is the one that goes in sync flawlessly with Holy Mountain. So the album is right. "With the shedding of skin, we have discarded our mechanical animals' clothes, costumes, stage items, etc. This will be okay available for auction, and a portion of the proceeds will go to charity." Okay, hold on. "In the name of Jehovah, Lucifer, Satan, and their union through Christ and JFK." Anyways, there's more, but it's this whole thing with Death Valley, Charles Manson being out on this property. This is also what they recorded the album where Charles Manson had his whole setup, which is right there near Kern Gate. So kind of on that property, kind of weird.
What do you think about that? Do you think it's just cool rock and roll mojo to record on Manson's family backyard, or just it's more entertainment, just fireworks? Or
I've never come across a more incredible sync in terms of film and music than Hollywood and Holy Mountain. And the fact that it's recorded there and there's all this ritual around it is just, it's just interesting. Yeah,
I have watched the first half of that sync, and I think I ran up against an element of my Kubrick thing, in that I need to spend more time with the album. I need to watch Holy Mountain another time and then remerge them. But I know it's there. You know what I mean? The full merger of the two into one hasn't necessarily occurred with your arrangement there. But I do know it's there for sure. So that's something I'm currently working with. And definitely enjoying. I think it's pretty amazing find, Dave.
Now, can I just throw something out at you? You said Kern Gate is like CERN. Well,
yes.
I actually wrote about right after comparing Oswald to, you know, both Oz and Alice in Wonderland. I say about the exactly what you say, the Queen of Hearts, the off with his head type deal. Now, you also have, like, John the Baptist, who gets beheaded. He's, right, he's John F. Kennedy. So they have this off-with-his-head motif. But you could also take that as that the Queen of Hearts is Kali, the, you know, who beheads the men, off with his head. And and in the case of Kali and Shiva, Shiva lays down to her. So it's that, like, you know, the same way you said, like, the king in Alice in Wonderland, the king is her bitch. But bear in mind, who is her king? Her king, so she's the queen of hearts, so her husband is the king of hearts. The whole reason my book is called Suicide Kings is because the king of hearts playing card shows the king putting a sword into his head.
Right.
He's known as the suicide king. So the suicide king puts the sword in his head, is the king of hearts, and his wife is the queen of hearts, the off with his head. You know, you take this very literally, you can take this correlation to Kali and Shiva. Now, so if the queen of hearts is Kali, what, then you have her husband, the king of hearts, being Shiva. So you have both the trident, Shiva has the trident, which we see as Dealey Plaza is a trident. And you have Kern Place and CERN with the statue of Shiva outside of CERN.
Right.
It's as if there really is some sort of... Now if you want to take an interesting sink, Bill, you mentioned this video coming out of Lana Del Rey. I would be interested to see the timing of this movie, this music video, and the announcement from CERN that they believe they found the Higgs boson.
Well, the video with Lana Del Rey with National Anthem, you know, I used to make a joke that Barack Obama wasn't the first black president of the United States because the United States ceased to exist on the day of November, you know, September 9th, 2001. There never was a black president of the United States. But really, and you know, this is delicate language for some people, but you know, John F. Kennedy was the first black president of the United States. And if you understand Irish people and what the Irish were to America when they came over here, they were the lowest of the low, weren't they? You know, with the term paddy wagon, that's a slur. And it still exists in our culture because the Irish drunks needed to get thrown into these wagons. And the opinion of an Irishman in America was lower than the lowest of low. So the fact that one of these Irishmen and a Catholic became president of the United States, well, he is the black president. So if Osiris is a black god and JFK is a black president, then in that Lana Del Rey video, what else are they representing there? Is a black president. And it's not skin color. It's just that one of the people, one of the someone who came from the people, not from the established elite. That follows, right?
Sure, it follows. I just want to state my distinction is, I think your point is actually incredibly valid. I want to throw that out there. Is your point is like seriously incredibly valid as far as the relating that video and JFK as the, you know, the first Catholic, the first Irishman, all this, you know, the Irish Catholic guy, so on, so on. I just want to make this sort of point, in my opinion, that they're also, they get the same free pass based on their status as the perceived underdog, that when they're doing essentially the same thing that every other schmuck politician has done, it's sort of like different because they did it. I just sort of feel strongly that's something that bothers me. So I want to make a distinction that your point is way valid, and yet I sort of take issue with, you know, like something I got it when I was doing this show with Frederick X on Tuesday. I was guest hosting 42 Minutes. I got passionate at the end. I really hope I didn't offend the guy, but he brought up this quote that I see constantly being used, that, you know, JFK says talks about secrecy and secret societies because we're surrounded by a monolithic conspiracy. And it's this idea that JFK was one of the good guys. He knew what was up. Bullshit.
He was a fucking gangster, dude.
Yeah, bullshit. It was like JFK was a fucking gangster, scumbag.
Wait. Keep going, but I have to respond to that. Okay.
But that speech, that fucking speech that everyone says, here's JFK telling everyone, revealing the big secret that, you know, there's a secret society conspiracy controlling us. Bullshit. Those are two lines pulled out of context. It's a speech to the press, okay? It's actually, he's sitting amongst, like, the Newspaper Association of America saying to them, hey, I know we don't like secrecy, but I want you to kind of, like, be aware that I might need to do some secret shit. I might do some things that I don't really want you putting in the press. Look, he plays it close, and it's almost like he struggles with it. Like, hey, you know, there's some very honest language in there of, like, saying, hey, what he's saying is, I know that everyone hates secrecy, and I really don't want to censor anybody, but I feel that I'm just letting you know that we got this issue that we need to deal with. On the face value, it doesn't seem that bad. Living post 9/11, where we say, hey, listen, you know, for national security, we're going to need to do some stuff. It's just inexcusable. And that's the advantage of having seen where that goes, that I take such a strong stance. But ultimately, to turn around and say this guy was the, like, savior of democracy and freedom, and, oh, once he was killed, everything went to shit. Nonsense. He was as much of a... I mean, my other thing is, here's a guy, you know, with the whole Camelot shtick. So here's a guy who sees himself as the king, saying, I need secrecy in government, to the Newspaper Association, and somehow he's the beacon of democracy. No, he's a guy who thought he's, you know, filled with the same hubris as every other politician.
Well, this is my read on it, Alan. And I don't have a scholarly read on history. I just get what's filtered to me.
Sure.
And what I have is, this is how I read it. Joe Kennedy, the father, was a bootlegger, right? That's how he made his wealth. That's how he got his family out of the slums. That's how he got some respect attached to his Irish heritage. He had some power. He had some clout. He was integrating himself into the American economy, and he was becoming a player. All right? If you watch Boardwalk Empire, I don't know if you caught this show, but it's brilliant. You know, in every major city, there were warring factions of these little players. You had Polish gangsters, you had Jewish gangsters, you had Irish gangsters, you had Italian gangsters. These were like these mid-level managers who had power, had clout, had a dominion over their terrain, but they knew at any minute the U.S. government, right, they could come down and crush them at any time. So what Joe Kennedy realized was, if we could get one of our own into the presidency, then we could really run this motherfucker, right? So John Kennedy, his son, the golden child, was groomed to be exactly that. And I don't know how well John and Bobby knew exactly what their father was and what their father came from. It's naive to think that they knew everything that was going on. I guess it's naive to think that they didn't know what's going on, but somewhere in the middle. So Joe Kennedy, with his system and with the people that were willing to try to get one of their guys into the presidency, they got Chicago to steal Illinois for him with fake votes. And lo and behold, this little Irish guy, became president of the United States. Now, I always heard growing up in the 80s that there would never be a black president, because the minute he would get elected, someone would put a bullet through his head, right? Well, you know, it didn't take long for them to put a bullet through John F. Kennedy's head. And it didn't take long for them to put a bullet through Bobby Kennedy's head, because these low-level guys, these middle management guys, who are supposed to be the tools of the real power structure, they got a little too big. They started fucking with things that they weren't supposed to fuck with. So my read on it is, when Kennedy got into the office and got the microphones and got the press around him, he just wanted to say, hey, listen, you think I'm the most powerful man in the Western world? Not a chance. I'm just this, you know, the figurehead for this corporation known as America right now, and they can take me out at any time that they want.
I'm sorry, are you referring to that same speech?
I'm trying to, that's my read on the speech.
So I encourage everyone, I really was on the fence about weaving this in the book, and based on the two conversations I've had this week, I think it's really important that I do weave it in. I put the full text of the speech in there, which I thought was too long and maybe too much of a divergence, but that's the point, is he's not saying that. I encourage everyone to please look up the full text of that speech.
Okay, will do.
I've listened to it several times. I don't know the complete context of who he was speaking to at the time. He's speaking to the press?
Yeah, all right. It's the address before the American Newspaper Publishers Association, April 27th, 1961. That should be more than enough information for people to Google it, look it up. I really encourage everyone to look at the full text of that speech, because he's not saying, hey, I'm not as powerful as you think I am. I'm just a schmuck on a totem pole. That's not what he's saying. He's talking about Cold War. What he's saying is, you know, where we have to fight communism around the globe, and communism's some shady shit, so we needed to do shady shit to fight communism. It's the same thing as saying, like, you know, the terrorists don't announce their plans, so if we want to fight terrorists, we have to, you know, spy on everybody and do whatever. We have to be the same kind of evil. It's really the same speech. That's right.
I guess there is the statement that he says. This is what catches people's attention, I'm sure, is when he goes, "There is a global there is a conspiracy within our own government to withhold information." He says conspiracy literally. So I don't know.
But the conspiracy he's talking about is communism. I'm not trying to force.
No, I know you're not.
So I just really encourage everyone to, like, read the full text of that speech, because what he's talking about is Cold War. He says, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we as a people are inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. Blah, blah, blah. Now, he, in that paragraph, he's actually saying pretty interesting things. He goes, you know, listen, I know we don't like this. And he actually says, even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. All right. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. So he does say, like, yeah, I understand this is a slippery slope we're on. I give him immense credit for acknowledging that. But he also says, if you give me a second. He also says, in time of clear and present danger, the courts have held that even the privileged rights of the First Amendment must yield to the public's need for national security. If you are awaiting a finding of clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear and its presence has never been more imminent. He's saying, listen, if we have to, you know, the courts have said we can shut down the First Amendment, and this is that time. He's not encouraging exposing the corruption within government. He's advocating for government secrecy. That's the distinction I feel was important. And whether or not he thought, he might have thought it was a valid, you know, if we want to see him as a good guy, that's fine. And you could say that he was struggling with, oh my God, you know, there's this threat to America and I don't know how to deal with it. And I don't want to necessarily do this, but that might be what happens. Yeah, that's very possible. George Bush could have been well-intentioned also. Or they could have just been getting their strings pulled by the actual secret government, or what, however you want to interpret that. I just feel like we always get those few sentences thrown at us. Hey, look, he's saying there's a conspiracy. He's saying there's a conspiracy. But he's saying, look out for communism. We have to, you know, he's basically talking like Russian spies and all this sort of stuff. He's not talking about secret societies taking over America. He's talking, unless you want to make the jump to, you know, Mason, like some Christian fundamentalist conspiracy theorists make the jump that Masons are, part of some communist conspiracy. I don't make that jump in my mind, but if someone wanted to, I know people do. I just don't buy that.
A bunch of commie gays trying to get
their commie gay Jews, mind.
Yeah, there's a good George Carlin line about that. I'm sure you can repeat it off the top of my head. It's like, what does a Russian homosexual junkie sound like? It's like, workers of the world unite. It's George Carlin.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about that speech, and I was actually just talking about it to my girlfriend's parents. Were visiting from Seattle, and I was talking about that speech yesterday. Because initially we were talking about the whole Paul is dead thing, because her mom had watched a PBS special on the Paul is dead, idea. And it came in because I was basically speaking out about that. I must have a block to his name. The guy who fucking did JFK with Kevin Costner and Hoffa.
Oliver Stone.
I will watch an Oliver Stone movie, but if you think you're getting a fucking history lesson from watching an Oliver Stone movie, I'm sorry, you're not.
Well, if you go to school in America and think you're learning history in American schools, you're not. That's true. So he's just playing the same fucking game.
Right, but I mean, yeah, totally agreed. And it's one of these things where it's like, it makes me curious sometimes some of the things that he actually leaves out, as far as like, is it just he didn't know that, or is it his opinion, or what is he doing? Because there's examples specifically from the whole Warren Commission reaction that happened later on that JFK is about, that's just like, dude, there was pieces in there that are so crucial that weren't even mentioned, like in the film. They don't mention that the guy who did the head of the autopsy, like the lead guy, had never done a shotgun, like a bullet autopsy before. Any murder, actually, like autopsy, like, wouldn't you have somebody who's done, I don't know, at least a few, like, but he'd done zero. It's just like, what the fuck is that? Like, and there's like, there's a lot of examples like that, and so it makes me wonder. But I was kind of considering that speech, but I don't know. I've listened to the whole thing straight through a number of times, but I never have taken a complete position on it, just because it seems like there was a lot of fear-based stuff going on, specifically with communism. And I had that thought as well. Is he talking about, when he says secret society, is he saying our current associations, when we think secret society, you know, or is he talking about fear-based ideas around McCarthyism? So I don't know. It's interesting.
You know, I wrote that Oliver Stone is like a half tab of acid. In that he's an introduction. He's dipping your toes into thinking things that are essentially, if you're in eighth grade, they're un-American, you know. But it's just wiggling your toes. It's just giving you that exposure to it.
Right, because I don't, he, feel that much differently about his stuff than I do about 24 and Touch, you know? I mean, personally, I'm not a big Oliver Stone fan. I'm just, this is the way it is.
Do you know the story behind Salvador, right? His first movie?
I don't think I've seen it.
It's fucking brilliant, and it's funny, and it's got an edge to it. But he gave a fake script to the general who was in charge of the country. I think is it Nicaragua, or is it, I don't have my facts straight here. But he gave a fake script to the general of the country, the dictator, so that he could get the military and the helicopters to be part of the filming production. And in the fake script, it made it look like that the film would look kindly upon the country and its politics. So he goes and meets with them, gives them the script, and he's like, sure, I'll let you use the military and the helicopters. He films his movie, and then when the movie's released, it's nothing like the script he showed the general who ran that country. Pretty ballsy shit. And definitely pretty rebellious. That's taking kind of a big risk. And I don't know if all of Oliver Stone's work is anywhere near timeless. Maybe Natural Born Killers. That's just a perfect snapshot of everything in media of the 90s. I think it's brilliant. I think it's a work of high art, and I don't care what people say. I think it's genius. Just for being there in the moment and making a movie that's completely of the moment. It'll bring you back to the 90s, at least for me, like perfectly. But what he was doing with JFK, I mean, and with Hoffa, and with Platoon in the Vietnam War, you know, he was infiltrating the American film landscape with some sort of dissent, with some political rebelliousness. You know, he was just sort of, he saw that it wasn't out there, it wasn't mainstream, and there was no internet, and someone needed to just start building the foundation for people to ask questions again, because I don't think people ask questions in the mainstream in the decade of the 80s. And he got successful, and he had a platform, and that was how he chose to use it. And I know there's a lot of complaints to it, and I think they're valid, but I don't think you can dismiss him completely. And I'm not saying you're dismissing him completely, but I have a soft spot for Oliver Stone, because I think he did the best he could with the position he found himself in. It's a lot like Timothy Leary. There's a lot of things you can say bad about Timothy Leary, but he didn't have a Timothy Leary to learn from. He didn't have Timothy Leary's mistakes to look at and say, oh, that was kind of a bad decision. That guy was just improvising, you know? He was on top of the crest of that wave that Hunter S. Thompson talks about. And he got swallowed up in it when the wave died. It's almost insane how anonymous Timothy Leary is to most people nowadays.
All right, let me throw this at you. It's funny because when you guys were mentioning Charles Manson before, I thought it was interesting that Charles Manson wrote a song for the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Now you take Beach Boys who did Smile, mm-hmm. and what was Timothy Leary? Timothy Leary ended up doing something called Smile.
Yes.
And that I in Smile is a lowercase I in both of those.
You know what's right. weird is Dennis the Menace. So Dennis the Menace is this little kid who's a menace, and he's always like annoying Mr. Wilson. And it's funny because you know where I'm going with this then. So you have Dennis Wilson. So you have Brian Wilson, right? And you have Dennis Wilson, and Dennis was the fucking menace, dude. It's just it's so drummer. Funny. It's Mr. Wilson! It's
like, but the father, yeah, in the studio. Those outtakes of the father in the studio are amazing.
Menace to society.
Dennis the menace to society.
Justin Bieber, baby.
Okay. Pet Sounds is good. My favorite is Holland. But anyways, Holland's great, dude. That's such a fucking good album. Sail on Sailor and all of that. And it has the final song is all talking about Big Sur and shit. I love it. Anyways, that's all.
Favorite song by the Beach Boys. What's your favorite song by the Beach Boys?
That last song on Holland, I can't remember what it's called, but it is my favorite. Anyways.
I gotta go Surf's Up.
All right.
I might have to go with In My Room.
What's that?
I said I might have to go with In My Room.
That's a good one. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
In My
Charles,
Room.
Charles Manson. So I found this thing. Where is it? Okay, Shelley Duvall's Tall Tales and Legends. Did you guys? I don't know if you guys ever saw Shelley Duvall's show about fairy tales.
I saw a few clips from it. It's pretty creepy.
So it's super creepy, and she has the one with Rumpelstiltskin, which I thought was funny because we were just talking about. Okay, so watched Alien, realized Alien is totally about a woman who has an abortion. And that it's her aborting the mission, and there's this big dick that she wants out of her life, and she fucking boots the guy who is the alien, who's the dick that's trying to inseminate her body, which is the mother. So she's dealing with motherhood, right? And she blows the fucking motherhood up. And she, I mean, that's the thing. Sigourney Weaver is just like this empowered female, and she takes her pussy with her, right?
Right, the cat. Right, right.
With the cat, which is her
what's
pussy.
The pussy's name? Oh,
Jonesy.
Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows she'll be there. Holding hands, making all kinds of plans, while the jukebox plays. Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. Gotta be extra careful that we don't build our hopes up too high, 'cause she's got her own obligations, and so do I. Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. Well, it's time for us
us to believe it. It hurts so much, it hurts so much inside. Now she'll go her way, and I'll go mine. Tomorrow we'll meet the same place, the same time. Me and Mrs. Jones.